And welcome back to episode 130 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
130. Oh, getting the numbers keep getting higher.
I know. Every week, apparently. Well, nearly. I know,
it's shocking. Well, we are back for another roundup of the week's latest tech stories, interesting articles, and, well, of course, rumors, which as we get into Apple season, well, we are deep in Apple season. What's that, getting into
Apple season?
Yeah. We're deep in Apple season. So, yes, yeah, so we've got a couple more Apple rumors for you this week. Well, yeah, one's probably more reality than a rumor. We're going to talk FTX because this is a story that just gets weirder and weirder. We're going to talk Musk and his pause on AI, yet is he really? And then we're going to talk about Sega Sammy. Yep, I'm going to leave that one there because I'll tell you now, until I had to do some read up on this, I got confused too. And also, this week we're going to mention a little bit about Section 31. So if you're thinking, what the hell is Section 31? Clearly, you are not into Star Trek. But those of you that are, Section 31, of course, will make perfect sense. But we will make everything transparent and clear, unlike Section 31, later on in the show. So let's kick things off with FTX then, and Sam Bankman-Fried, or SBF as he seems to go by, or everybody goes by now, isn't it?
Indeed. So the liquidators have released their first formal report on FTX, and somehow it appears things are worse than we thought.
Is that possible?
I mean, it seems like it, reading this. It's a car crash. I mean, the high-level summary was basically little to no oversight on its own operations, leadership that stifled dissent, commingling of customer and corporate funds. They lied to investors and the public, well, we know that part. And somehow routinely misplaced millions of dollars of customer funds. Now, I didn't write down the quote, but I know you did. What was the quote about that one?
Oh, yes. So FBF wrote in this. I quote, "Sometimes we find $50 million of assets lying around that we lost track of. Such is life." SBF.
What? I said to you offline, I wish we had that problem. Just 50 million here, there, down the back of the sofa. Oh, look what I found today.
I'm lucky to find 5p down the back of my sofa, I'll tell you. So
no, I won't find that. The kids have been down there.
50 million. I mean, just utter chaos, isn't it? I mean, like I said, no, effectively, they said, was it, board oversight was effectively non-existent, according to the report that's come out.
No, I mean, and the bit that got me was basically they have no internal audit functions or employees with experience of finance, accounting, human resources, or cybersecurity, which would probably explain why virtually all the funds were stored in hot wallets. Now, if anyone doesn't know crypto, hot wallets are basically where you store your crypto assets, but they're permanently online, connected to the internet, so they could potentially be hacked and have funds removed from them by, you know, by an external hacker. So, you know, a properly run exchange would probably keep small amounts, you know, enough to do that day's trading in a hot wallet, and everything else would be kept in the cold wallets, you know, stored offline, not connected to the internet. There's no way of withdrawing those funds until they're connected to the internet. But apparently they didn't do that. They just kept it all in hot wallets,
which is ludicrous. And if we've learned anything in the last few years about any of these crypto, I'm going to say it, crypto scams, typically all of them have ended up being either hot wallets that were stolen, or some of them have been cold wallets that have just disappeared as well, isn't it? That nobody else but the single owner has had access to.
They'll appear at some point 20 years down the line and, slowly siphoned out.
Because that's what happens sometimes, isn't it, with these cold wallets, is that, you know, people disappear and they go dormant, and all of a sudden, some point in the future, they come. And they're kind of on a weird kind of tangent. This is the whole thing, isn't it, around the Bitcoin creator, what's his name, Satoshi, isn't it? Oh, I can't remember. The guy who is purporting to be him, isn't it, Craig Wright something, isn't it?
Oh, no, he keeps saying he is.
That's what I'm saying. He purports to be. Craig Stephen Wright purports to be, doesn't he? Satoshi. I'm going to butcher the name. Satoshi. That's it. And basically, everybody says, well, then if you are that guy, then you need to access the cold wallets that are in his name.
Yeah. Put it online.
Link to him.
Yeah. Do one transaction.
Yeah. And he keeps saying he doesn't do it, doesn't it? So this is the thing, isn't it? With the cold wallet, as you say, it's offline. You know, it's something you can bring back. And if you're running an exchange with the amount of money that
third largest exchange in the world at one point,
well, yeah, you know, FTX were doing, you wouldn't want that to be, you know, you wouldn't want basically $1.5 billion of assets just sat around where somebody could go, ooh, how do I gain access to that, isn't it?
Well, it's just, they had no one with experience of finance, accounting, HR, or more importantly, cybersecurity. And it got worse for that. So apparently the private keys to the FTX group's crypto assets were stored in a mix of over 1,000 AWS servers. So the actual keys to access these wallets were online in thousands of AWS servers. Now, I didn't say whether they were encrypted or hashed or salted. I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably not, considering the track record, which might explain why millions went missing.
This is like a bunch of kids, and that's basically what they were.
Yeah.
A bunch of kids who decided to start up some little hustling business, and of course, have got no experience in running business. And you know, some of the other evidence, wasn't it, that there was no nothing they showed to the auditors. Turned out they were using, was it QuickBooks, Google Documents, Slack, Shared Drive, Excel, and other non-enterprise solutions, according to the statement as well. You know, I'm not suggesting you need to go out there and be paying, I don't know, millions of dollars in software licensing, but you know, start using tools which are designed for this kind of thing. Yeah, QuickBooks, don't get me wrong, very good accounting software, does what it says on the tin, but not for running multi-billion dollar enterprises, is it?
No. But I mean, apparently, reading report, anyone that, you know, senior, but below obviously the top three, who tried to implement actual policies was basically sidelined and fired.
Well, this is it. This again, isn't it, is the whole thing. They had that triad of leadership, didn't they? Where, as you said, you weren't in the club. As we said before, are any of us surprised that this has gone down the toilet, given that the ISG? No. But what you got to keep asking yourself is that this isn't the first time this happens. It just keeps, it's just another notch in a post full of stories of similar, you know, track record.
Yeah.
And I think this is not helping the cause, in my opinion, either.
No, it's
for
not.
Crypto.
But then you've got that different mentality, haven't you? The fact that really it needs to be regulated, so stuff like this doesn't go down again. But the whole point of crypto things is they're not regulated. They're untraceable. No government controls them. So you've got a kind of difference of opinion on how to run this here.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Then, and the plus is, if you put the regulation in, you've then kind of killed the whole theory or thesis around.
Oh, one of the main selling points, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Wild West, you know. You take your gambles there, I think.
I think he is, you know. You gamble it, you're right, and do you come off it? I think, you know, crypto trading, if you got it in the early days, you know, when Bitcoin was laughable and, you know, people were buying pizzas with Bitcoin.
Didn't sell it all like me.
No, I mean, and that's the other thing. Now, if you're looking back at it now, people who bought pizza with Bitcoin just be like, how much money did I waste?
I had hundreds of coins that were worth pennies. You know, I mean, they were worth nothing. I used them to buy stuff that was meaningless. I think, I wish I'd kept those. But
yeah, you're right.
You know.
Yeah, and now you're too late to that party. Unless you've got money to burn, so to speak, to buy into it, it's not going to ever happen, is it?
And you can't go mining like you used to be able to on GPUs.
No, because it's all nerfed.
Certainly not with the price of electricity nowadays.
God, no.
No.
It is a crazy point. But yes, so FTX, whilst the court case hasn't carried on yet, this evidence is not going to help their plight anymore, is it?
No, not at all.
And, you know, I think SBF and those around him are probably looking at lengthy jail terms when this comes to pass, you know. But so, yeah, so it's they are still within the chapter. Well, they're still going through the Chapter 11 bankruptcy process in the US, aren't they? Which which is part of it. But yeah, I mean, this is absolutely nuts.
The only other one I've written down that made me laugh. They couldn't actually tell you who worked for the company and who didn't.
I know that was brilliant.
List of who was actually employed, which means they had no controls over stopping their access to systems, surely. So people who no longer worked or maybe fired by the company probably still had access to the systems. I mean, Anyway, moving on. I just too stressful to think of that one.
Yeah, my brain has just imploded on itself because it's like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, you want to do what?
Well, we need to have your mind blown again. You've got to love Elon Musk. Love him or hate him, he makes life entertaining.
He does.
So a couple of weeks, a month back, Elon, along with a number of big names, signed an open letter calling for basically a pause on AI development, didn't they? Specifically, anything more advanced than ChatGPT-4, you know, let's take a breather for 6 months, figure out how we regulate this, etc., etc. Now, obviously, that might be a little odd, considering he was a co-founder of OpenAI, you know, the creators of ChatGPT back in 2015. Not co-creator. He invested in it, okay? So he wasn't the creator of the thing. But anyway, so since writing and signing that letter, he's purchased over 10,000 GPUs. Now, he must really like gaming. Or more realistically, you know, these are actually NVIDIA's H100 and A100s.
Specifically designed
for, you guessed it, AI. And he's created a new company, hasn't he? A subdivision called XAI Corp.
Well, all part of his X Corp holding company, isn't it?
It is. And to top it all off, he's building a new product. Can anyone guess what this is?
Oh, hang on. Oh, it's something GPT, I think.
It's a gaming company. No. It's an AI company, Truth GPT. Oh, the tagline, or what he said in an interview, a maximum truth-seeking AI that tries to understand the nature of the universe. So what?
Back it up a minute. So, Elon Musk...
Is this something to do with his 420 and smoking lots of it?
So last month they registered a firm, as you say, called X.AI. So it's a very new company. Sole director is Musk. Managing director the secretary is the managing director of Musk's family company.
Yeah.
So it's a very small thing. And as you're right, this 6 month pause that him and a group of experts and industry people have called for, because they feel that ChatGPT and others are a risk to society. And okay, I don't think anybody who is in the industry disagrees that if we continue to pursue some of the areas of AI, we're not going to cause ourselves to have Skynet and kill ourselves, but we are probably causing some risk to established industries. We could come up with, ethical issues around it. You know, we're not talking about, what in his words are civilization destruction.
I don't know. He wants to put this in Teslas, and they're just like 2 or 3 ton death.
That's the truth. That's the truth, GPT, is it? The ChatGPT piece, right? I mean, look, I'm a big fan of it. You know I am. I think it's very clever. Bard is not so clever, in my opinion. Bard is very different. ChatGPT, I mean, I'm not going to go into specifics, but I've used it several times now in my professional and private life to do different things, and it has been very successful.
It has.
Very. Yeah. Now, but I stress this a lot, and we joke about this in our own industry, right? You could be as clever in a way, in our industry, jokingly, it's how well can you use Google? Anybody can use Google, but how well can you give it a prompt and interpret the outcomes of it? That's the key. Yeah. And the same is with ChatGPT or similar. Mm-hmm. It is about how nuanced are the prompts and what do you do with the output? Because, you can ask it anything. Yeah, exactly. And if you've got to learn how to use the tool properly, I'm not suggesting that I am an expert in it, not at all, but I'm getting more familiar with the concept of how it works and the outcomes of it and how to generate better responses with it. And actually, I do think there is great use in it. Now, here's his Truth GPT, as you say, this maximum truth-seeking AI, almost kind of sounds like the thing that he wants to stop building, isn't it?
I think he, obviously, the industry have brought this up. I think he's just put his name against it, hoping to buy himself 6 months for Truth GPT to catch up.
Yeah, of course it is, like a lot of things.
Yeah. And no one does that, then goes out and buys tens of thousands of GPUs.
No, and he said that the reason that he departed from OpenAI, wasn't it, that he had a lot of manufacturing and issues with Tesla and SpaceX. And apparently, I think we talked about this before, wasn't it, that Tesla were trying to hire some of the same people as OpenAI, and the kind of, he felt that it was better to step away. To me, this does sound more and more like him now throwing his toys out the pram, because he's like, rubbish.
He wanted to run OpenAI as well, yeah. And they turned him down. So that didn't help.
No, an OpenAI now is leaps and bounds ahead of competition. You know, we know that from the Microsoft investment into them, which probably upsets Musk highly.
Massively.
But, you know, the TruthGPT thing is an interesting point. It does make you wonder what actually his outcome here is. Putting it into the cars could be very clever. But on the other hand, then, how do you convert something that runs on all of that back end? Because that's the other thing, remember here. This is not something at this stage in time that you could condense to run on a local platform such as, you know, Tesla or your PC, is it?
No.
This is data center spec computing power, isn't it?
So, big data center spec, yeah.
Yeah, lots of generation. You know, and I just, you know, I just, I wonder what the outcome here. And I think, you know, as you say, the outcome here is actually for him to play catch up, not for them to build some, I don't know, ethical, you know, question. I mean, when I read that, to be honest with you, Maximum Truth Seeking AI, what was it? Because it's a
tries to understand the nature of the universe.
Okay, back it up. That has got to be almost a line from Douglas Adams's,
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Because isn't that the supercomputer that they asked for? Tell us what the secret of the universe is. 42. Yeah.
42.
and let's be honest, that sounds to me like the kind of the thing why they built it, isn't it? Yeah. Like,
sorry, 42? Yes, but what is the question? Yeah. And that's where they leave them.
Exactly. You know, 42 is the answer to everything, isn't it?
The
answer to the ultimate life, question of life, the universe and everything, calculated by the supercomputer named Deep Thought. It took it 7.5 million years, mind. But as you say, no, nobody knows what the question is. And that kind of, you know, ironically, it feels like what he's doing here, you know. Musk is, he's got the biggest messiah complex on this planet, at the moment.
Hasn't he?
Because what's the other? Isn't he? You know, Neuralink. You know, Neuralink is close to doing supposedly human trials. You know, you can almost kind of think, "Oh my God, is there some giant plan here to link together Neuralink, chat, TruthGPT?"
I won't be signing up for Neuralink.
What, you don't want me to plug something in your head?
No. I'm okay. Maybe in the future. Not saying no, but I'm not convinced by Musk on this one. Would you want to be the guinea pig?
Yeah, no, you're okay.
No, exactly.
But yes, so Musk causes for pause on AI while spending millions on his own project. Oh, yes. Yeah. If there was anybody else, you would laugh, but with him, it's just another day at work.
It is. So speaking of millions, somebody's been flashing the cash recently.
A lot of millions.
And yeah, as we were speaking just before, this kind of threw us. So Sega Sammy, who? You mean exactly. Sega? No. Sega Sammy. No. So apparently Sega Sammy was a merger between Sega and Sammy Corporation back in 2004. I've never heard of this.
No, I'm going to go on record here of saying that when I saw this story, and I initially thought I read it as Sega wants to acquire, Rovio, who we'll talk about a bit more in detail in a second. I was like, and then the next update was Sega Sammy. I was like, who the hell is Sega Sammy? I was like thinking, is that some developer arm of Sega that, you know, that builds something? But no, you're right. 2004, Sega Sammy Group is a giant holding company formed from the merger of Sega, who as we know is gaming machines and gaming software, with the Sammy Corporation. Now, Sammy Corporation, completely unknown to me, turns out that they are another company involved in the amusement arcade industry. They make, again, I think if I pronounce this correctly, was it Pachinko machines? I think that's the right way of getting it. Which are very big in Japan, aren't they? Massively big, huge, aren't they?
So,
as I understand it, they're very similar to a slot machine that gives you kind of a prize, but you have to then convert the tokens to a prize at a separate place.
It's very convoluted. You still have them in the UK at the amusements at the beach, don't you? You do your game, you get your tokens, you take your tokens somewhere else, and you have to get 10 million tokens to get a pencil or whatever it is, you know.
But this is to do with a loophole in Japanese law, because gambling for cash is highly illegal in Japan.
Yeah.
But these are a kind of a loophole, because Pankachiko is exceptionally popular and basically means that now you win what effectively looks like ball bearings from the machine.
Yeah.
And as you say, you can't, then you have to take them.
You have to move to a different premises, do you?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Where you can then convert them for...
I'm selling my ball bearings, and that gets me £20. Is something like that?
You're going to give me an equivalent prize value of it. So yeah, so you basically take it to a separate off vendor, you know, which apparently are you know independent from the gambling or packaging
board. Of course they are.
But funnily enough, are owned by the same company. Yeah, you worked that one out. They then sell the tokens back. So you'll get your prize token, you know, and then they're sold for cash, as you say, and then the prize vendor sells the tokens back to the gaming hall for the same price.
Not related at all. But yeah, so that's Sega Savvy. They've apparently just bought Robio, you know, of Angry Birds fame.
Oh, I mean, is that still a thing?
Well, yes, apparently. I mean, all I know is them from Angry Birds. You know, they've made a million different versions of it.
And a film.
Of course, they've got the two films. There's Angry Birds 2. But they haven't really diversified since then. I don't know of any other game franchises they've made. It's just all Angry Birds. But Sega Sammy have obviously seen enough in them to pay a cool 706 million euros for them.
Yeah, not a lot then.
No, I mean, well, not as much as what they were once worth. You know, that's apparently €9.25 a share. 10%, so that's 10% above the share price before the announcement. But that's still 20% below the price it went public with 5 years ago.
Yeah, this is the problem, isn't it? That obviously, they went public during the boom time of Angry Birds. I mean, I remember going to, I used to go to, for business, I used to go to a hotel in Amsterdam, and in the lifts, they had iPads mounted in the lifts with Angry Birds on them.
Really? Wow, okay.
You know, as you were going in the lift, you could have a quick flick game of Angry Birds.
Why not?
I've not been back there since post COVID, so I suspect they've probably gone now. But
I imagine so. But according to analysts, this is apparently Sega's bid. So their bid for Robio, it's driven by an ambition to build a super game, you know, along the lines of Fortnite or Minecraft, that creates like a large global community of gamers and brings them all together.
Good luck.
I don't think Angry Birds for that. And if they've not built anything else in the, I don't know, whatever, how long they've been around for, 10, 15 years or whatever
Yeah.
Are they going to have the expertise to build anything other than Angry Birds or anything other than a 2D kind of thing? I don't know. I just don't understand this one.
I suspect, though, is it the fact that you could argue Robio have got experience in building, you know, a brand, and, you know, they've got the back-end infrastructure to develop the games. Sega have got the expertise in publishing games. They've got the expertise in driving, you know, all of that forward. Yep. In theory, you could argue that, you know, this could be a good match. But you're right, Rovio haven't got, they've not got another successor to Angry Birds where they've gone, this is fantastic, and, you know, we've launched, I don't know, very cross pelicans. I don't know where that came from. but that's what I'm saying. You're right, there isn't like a stable of games here where they've taken the success of one and built it into another. They're still trading off Angry Birds. Up to 70%,
still making a profit, apparently.
Well, say, yeah, up to 70%, though, of Rovio's, or Rovio, or Rovio, its profit comes from Angry Birds. Now, when you look at the games they developed, there's a whole mixture of weird games like Desert Sniper, Darkest Fear. They were churning out Java-based games for the best part of the 2000s. So the early 2000s, they were bouncing. They started off with, do you remember the old N-Gage from Nokia?
Ah, the N-Gage. I remember that one, yeah. The console that also was a phone?
Yeah, well, basically.
Was that phone that was console?
Well, this is it. They churned, their first was an N-Gage game in 2008 called Bounce Boing Voyage. Yes.
Right.
And then basically throughout that, they've just, well, no, sorry. No, that wasn't their first game. Sorry, that was one of the first, sorry, they're one of the first games, I should argue. Their first game was back in 2003, which was a Java-based game. But again, as I said, they've done the N-Gage and things like that. But since 2009, pretty much, apart from a lesson, you can count one hand, every other game they've released since 2009 to 2022 has been Angry Birds.
It has. And I suppose they are the masters of pay-to-play now.
Well, yeah.
Along with Candy Crush, you know, it's all about getting those microtransactions. And that's a lot of what Minecraft, to an extent, you buy add-ons for that, and they do actually add value, and it's not a consistent thing. But Fortnite is very much the same, though, isn't it? It's pay-to-play. You buy all your little add-ons and your microtransactions, I should say.
Yeah, and if you look at it as well with, you know, with Rovio, they've diversified because you've had, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 12 TV series around Angry Birds.
Really?
currently running at the moment. And they actually, and as you pointed out, there's not just been one, but there's been two Hollywood movies. The first one grossed $352 million on a $73 million budget. Okay. And the second one did 152 on a $65 million budget. It's not quite successful, but
still made a profit though.
Still made a profit. Now, you know, we're not talking again. This, you know, let's be frank here. This is a very classic case of sticking to what you know, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Very much so.
But, you know, and I wonder, as you say, the pay to play argument is probably where they're going here. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what actually comes out of this. I suspect it'll take some time. You know, Sega wants to do more in mobile gaming because they've diversified massively from their traditional business, yeah, haven't they? Around you know, arcades, and I mean, look, we grew up on that, didn't we? Sega arcades,
pumping those 10p's in, yeah.
You know, I could just. And my first experience of VR was back in the early 90s.
Sega.
You know, G-Lock in the old... Remember G-Lock in the 360-degree spinner?
One? Yes, was the plane one. Yeah, that was my first experience. I loved that game.
You know, it's just, again, it's just all of these things that are that remind me of my childhood. But, you know, everything comes to pass, isn't it, that are good. And I think Sega has floated from memory since, you know, the end of the console wars. And now we've got, really, Sega as a developer, aren't they? Publisher, probably more to the point, really, yep. I'd say, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
So Sega Sammy buys Rovio then, and we're going to
it's not through yet, though, is it? It's still going to wait for, you know, to be approved. So we'll see, but I can't see any problem with it. There's nothing glaring that says it'll be an issue.
No, there's going to be, I can't see any regulatory issue with this one. It's not going to upset, the pay-to-play market's too big for that, given that, you know, the other players usually say King and all those kind of other players. Though, interestingly, though, back in early January this year, they did receive a higher offer, didn't they, from another base?
Oh, did they?
Yeah, so back in January, just to kind of close out that, they received an $810 million offer from Playtika, her based in Israel. But the talks had ended in March. So this is a lower offer, isn't it, from Sega? But is it, I wonder, the pedigree, the back end of Sega, that gives you that kind of, you know, better to take the deal?
I think so.
But so the shareholders, as I think the board and the shareholders have accepted on this, but you're right, it's just got to be put through, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, interesting times ahead. So then, slight diversion from the usual, right? Yeah. We are obviously big fans of Star Trek on this show, and you know, currently we're about, this week is the final episode of Star Trek Picard,
which it is.
Which I should add has just dropped into my download box, by the way.
Oh, has it?
Episode 10.
That's out early, isn't it?
Well, that's what I was puzzled about. I'm like, is that dodgy or not? Anyway, episode 10, which is coming out, which is called The Last Generation, isn't it? I think is the next episode. But if we take a step back from that, we also are awaiting the next episodes of Strange New Worlds, which is set in the original timeline space. Which was a spin-off from Star Trek Discovery. Now, those who've been following Star Trek Discovery, which was probably the earliest canon entry into Star Trek lore. What I mean by that is that apart from the Star Trek Enterprise, it takes us back before Kirk's Enterprise into that timeline there. And obviously, for those that watch it will know that the Discovery is now in the 32nd century, so way beyond anything that's happened elsewhere. But before they did that, they had several characters, including Michelle. I can't remember how it's her name. Michelle Yeoh, isn't it? Who you may know that she recently won an Oscar for Everywhere, Everything, All at Once, which is a very good sci-fi film. And in Star Trek Discovery, she played two characters. She played the captain in the first few episodes of Philippa Georgiou, who was the captain of the Shenzhou, which was the initial thing. But she also played Emperor Georgia. Philippa Georgiou, who was in the Mirror Universe, wasn't she? Who was a brutal leader of the Mirror Universe. And we won't go into all that now because that could take another several hours. but she came. She hopped through the Mirror Universe into the Prime Universe went from being the bad guy, didn't she, to kind of, I don't want to say a good guy, but kind of like playing her own game, but, you know.
Yes. And ultimately ended up in Section 31, didn't she, which is kind of a Black Ops division of Starfleet Intelligence.
It is. Section 31's had a bit of a checkered history, isn't it, within the Star Trek kind of lore?
Yes. I mean, according to the old canon, obviously it's in the original Starfleet Charter, Article 14, Section 31, which basically allowed for extraordinary measures to be taken in times of extreme threat. Basically, these are the guys you send in to clear up your mess and then deny all knowledge of their existence.
Yeah, and don't forget, Starfleet is not a military organization, apparently.
No. This is very much a military organization, Section 31.
Yeah, Section 31, as you say. So the Section 31 is there to, as you say, do the stuff that, you know, they look look the other way, isn't it? You know,
yes, Section 31. Exactly.
But as you say, when you want something dirty done, they are the people that go in. So they've been around, you know, as you say, since kind of the formation of Starfleet. But, you know, we heard rumours of them. In the original series, there wasn't too many, I guess, references to them, was there?
No.
But in Discovery, of course, we had Enterprise with Scott Bakula. They were mentioned about them, weren't they?
They keep popping up every now and then, don't they? You don't hear too much about them.
No, and there's several, you know, kind of things, and they show up in DS9, and, you know, they, as you say, they're woven in between, and they also showed up in the Kelvin universe, which is the what's his name?
Films
by I can't think of his name.
J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams, thank you very much. In the Kelvin universe, they have the Section 31 place in London, didn't they? They got bombed in the alternative reality.
They did, yeah.
But yes, in the Discovery timeline or Discovery things, Section 31 were there to kind of, I guess, clean up the mess of what happened there. And Philippa Georgiou joined them because how else do you keep somebody from the Mirror Universe from, I guess, causing a problem in the Prime timeline? So we were expecting a series, wasn't there? There's been rumors for a long time.
Yeah, a TV series for a while, wasn't there?
Around a TV series. But now it's come out that actually this is going to be a film, isn't it? Rather than a.
So, yeah, I don't know when they're going to start filming or when this will be out. You know, I thought Section 31, the TV series, would be out this year, but I'm obviously not now. It's a film, so I'm going to guess next year maybe we get this one out. But, yeah, I mean, I'm up for a new film. Why not?
Well, they've been, as you said, it's been teased for quite a few years now, hasn't it?
Since
I think about probably, what was it, beyond the second or third series of Discovery, it's been teased. And then obviously with the announcement of the Picard series, it was, you know, confirmed back in 2019 that this was in development. And Picard kind of, and Strange New Worlds kind of leapt forward, didn't they? And with Star Trek Discovery finishing next year, I can't remember. No, it's next year, isn't it? Discovery, with the fifth series. This is probably a good time to have. But, you know, we haven't had any new Star Trek films in the Prime timeline, if that makes sense, have we, for some time. What was the last one? Nemesis? Yeah, got to be in it. Nemesis was the last one in the Prime timeline?
Oh, yeah. That was Next Generation. So, yeah, it would have been, Nemesis.
Yeah, so we've had Star Trek films, to be clear, because we've had the J.J. Abrams films, but there's been no Prime timeline films, I'd say, since Star Trek Nemesis. So we now, you know, I think it's a good time to have a film here. This is going to show, unsurprisingly, on Paramount Plus. No, make show shocked there. Apparently, it's going to bring in production later this year, but again, no dates have been given, as you see. So the press release says that, according to Michelle Lew, in a press release, Section 31 has been near and dear to her heart since she began the journey of playing Philippa all the way back when the golden age of Star Trek was launched with Star Trek Discovery. To see her finally get her moment, and this is, she's talking about Philippa Georgiou, to get her moment is a dream come true in a year that showed me the incredible power of never giving up in your dreams. We can't wait to share what's in store for you. Until then, live long and prosper, unless Emperor Georgiou decrees otherwise, end quote. You know, she is a phenomenal actress. You know, if you haven't seen Everywhere, Everything All at Once, I highly recommend that. It also stars the other male who got best actor for it, who was in The Goonies and also in Indiana Jones. What is his name? He took a break from acting, didn't he? Hugh Kwan. I'm sorry if I butchered that. He played Data in Goonies, and he played Short Round in Temple of Doom.
Ah, yes, of course. Yep.
And he won, you know, and basically he gave up acting for many, many years.
Okay.
And then he came back, and he then, as you say, won an actor for Everything Everywhere All at Once, which he got a Golden Globe and a Screen Actors Guild Award as well. So what a phenomenal second half to his career, I should say.
Definitely.
So, Section 31. Okay, so let me fire up the... And it's time for the rumour mill.
Well, this is not a rumour about the VR AR headset from Apple, which should be announced at WWDC this year. This is about the one that, you know, we've talked about before, we're really looking forward to, when the technology is right, is their AR glasses. So our old favourite, Ming-Chi Kuo, he's put a new research note saying, you know, don't expect them anytime soon now. He says, we're not looking at mass production until 2026 or 2027 at the earliest. So a way off there, I think. But, you know, in his research note, he goes on to talk about not the metaverse, but meta lenses. And I'm trying to work out what these are. So these are basically flat lenses, but they're capable of focusing light. So you usually need a curved lens to focus light. But apparently these new flat lenses will be able to do that. And that will allow them to be a lot lighter, a lot smaller and thinner than, you know, the AR glasses you use. But, you know, I think there's more technology that needs to be honed in before that, isn't there? Better batteries, where's the processing going? You know, is this going to be in the glasses itself? Is this going to be in your phone or a device you strap to your waist or something? Not sure. A lot to be figured out before there. And hence why I think he's put the 26-27 timeline there.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts here in this story here. But I think, you know, as you say, you know, this is not the headset. As you say, this is the glasses, the kind of glasses you wear, I wear, Tim Cook wears. And, you know, you're right. This is almost a spiritual successor to Google Glass in that respect, isn't it? You know, where you can wear them all day long and have the generated content. I mean, this is utopia, because, you know, having... you know, kind of overlays looking at my glasses, you know, kind of a direction finding.
Definitely.
In a UI, which I really hope will be plausible, as opposed to kind of some weird overlay of, like, you know, Universal Soldier, if you're old enough to remember that.
Well, I just like, you know, taking a laptop out for work and being able to just have extra screens appear in my vision there to give me multi-monitored, but on the go.
I mean, that would be cool. I don't deny that. That would be cool. I think, you know, there's a lot of options here that could be done. The problem is, and I think it's quote, is around the technology needs to catch up with the reality. You know, and to squeeze all that down into small frames, you know, this isn't necessarily just about the glass. This is about the computing power, isn't it? And doing that, well, you know, are they going to be coupled with your phone? Probably likely, but wirelessly, how do you get that data bandwidth going? You know, this is all of those things, isn't it, that, you know, they kind of need to overcome. And I think, you know, we'll know it's ready when you see Tim Cook wearing a different pair of glasses. And that would be like,
he does. I think you've got the other one. It's not just using indoors, you know, if you're wearing prescription glasses, you wear them everywhere. So they've got to be able to project a bright enough image, isn't it, that it works in direct sunlight. So there's no point having it if it doesn't work outside, especially if you're paying for a prescription version of it.
Exactly. It needs to work in all conditions. And you need to be able to, see it. You need to be able to understand, you know, be able to, superimpose the data, everything you want there, not without going, oh, that's blurry, or I can't see anything now because my eyes are blinded by this, you know, beam of light. But yeah, the technology needs to be there. The lens capabilities there. You know, this is kind of where everybody's going to want to be heading, isn't it? But what will be interesting to see whether or not they reference any of this in the coming, not necessarily at Dub, but in the next year or so around, you know, where the vision goes, if that makes sense, you know?
Definitely, yeah.
Apple obviously don't like to announce too much before it's released. You know, we won't look at you, charging pad, what's it called, power mat. But, you know, this is
Air Power,
the way it's called.
Air Power,
that's the one. Yeah, so rubbish, I couldn't even remember what it was called. But yeah, 2026 probably seems more plausible, to be realistic about this, isn't it? I mean,
it does,
27
yeah.
or 26, you know. And Quo, okay, you know, he's got a pretty good hit rate, let's be honest. He's not unusually wrong on these things. But I think, yeah, you've got to play it safe here and actually think about what technology is available today, versus what is the vision, you know, and both of those things are not aligned at this time.
No, not at all. So we'll wait. I mean, we'll get there eventually, hopefully. But yeah, something that's coming a bit closer, and obviously it's going to be announced at WWDC, is iOS 17. You know, I'd be absolutely shocked if it wasn't announced at WWDC.
What?
So, according to Mark Gurman, iOS 17, Apple is allegedly building the groundwork for sideloading of apps. Now, if you remember, this is pretty much guaranteed that they're going to have to do it. The EU is mandating it with the Digital Markets
Act? Digital Markets Act, DMA.
That's the one, DMA. So, they're going to force Apple's hand here. So, at this point, you know, we expect to hear something, but it's kind of unclear if this means with iOS 17 you'll be able to actually sideload apps, or this is just Apple building the mechanisms in. I mean, my bet it's going to be the mechanisms, and it won't be enabled until they absolutely have to at the very last moment. They'll flick that switch and allow you to do it.
So, yeah, I think you're right. So the DMA comes into force in 2024.
Yes.
Now, is that 2024 midnight on the 1st of January? I believe it's, from what I understand, it's March.
Yeah, which would be before iOS 18 is out, or even talk of iOS 18 at WWCC. So yeah, I think they have to have it there, but you're not going to see it actually enabled at the last minute.
So I believe that the requirements of the DMA have to be done by the 6th of March 2024. That's kind of the cutoff point. So it'll be fully applicable by then, yeah. Unless you have a well substantiated argument,
which they'll be creating at the moment, obviously, and trying to push.
So I get where they're going. You know, as much as my views on sideloading, you know, I think, to be honest with you, for the majority, and I, you know, shoot me down, but for the majority of users, this will not be something they will want to or need to do.
Yeah, you're right.
For majority of users, right? There is a small subset of users who will want to do this. There will be developers who will want to do this because it will mean that they can circumvent some of the App Store regulations. But Apple will make this, from a security standpoint, as stringent as they can. And, you know, there will be things like, I imagine things like the Mac Gatekeeper capability built in, you know, where you can only install apps from trusted sources and or you know, third-party developers. But, you know, that's what, these are going to have to be signed applications, because, you know, as you and I both know, you've been able to sideload apps on iOS for donkey's years. This isn't new. Cool. You can do it through an MDA. You can do it through an MDM, excuse me, mobile device management platform. And you can do that with self-signed certs. You don't have to have, you know, the full Apple, you know, signing certs for it. It can be done, you know, in a very different approach. So Apple, I think, will, you know, the mechanism's there. It's now opening it up, as you say, to developers to do it. And I think it's Apple are going to make, they're going to put in the capability to do it. But as you're right, it will not be something that will be switched on probably until about the .3 release, I reckon, of iOS 17. So
at least.
If you're talking March, it'll be dropped in there probably towards the end of iOS 17's, you know, development cycle. And will probably then be enabled with a full release in iOS 18. That's my view. You'll be able to do it. I think you'll be able to do it towards the end, you know, towards early part of next year. But it will be one of those things that they'll talk about when they launch iOS 17. You know, like Apple always does.
Yeah.
They talk about certain features, don't they? And then those features don't get enabled until like the .3 or the .4 release.
Wait,
we've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen it so many times before with them. With capability. Do you remember, like, with portrait mode, all that kind of stuff, dot two, dot three release, you know? And I think that's exactly what you're going to see here with that capability. It's going to have to happen, as much as my view on it, you know, it will happen. But I think they'll play it down. That's just an opinion, you know?
Yep. Yeah, no, you're right. It'll be the very last minute when their hand is forced.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to do anything else. Apple, you know, for them, this is the holy grail of everything, breaking it, isn't it, from where they're concerned. So they're not going to want to do anything to basically weaken the security of iOS. Given everything that's happened in the last few years around, you know, mobile security, the last thing that you want or Apple are going to want to do is basically poke holes in their little wall garden any more than they have to.
Yeah,
this is going to be a very well-crafted door, isn't it? You know?
Yep, you're right.
You know, so... Oh, yeah, so there we go. That is it. Anything else? Have we got anything else in the bucket? Or
no,
is that just
that's it? That's it for today.
Well, it's probably a good place for us to wrap up for this week then. We will be back next week for episode 131 of all the latest roundups and show notes, all the latest information on the show, the latest tech stories. Of course, you can find all of our show notes at techrant.online. And we are still on Twitter, despite the exodus. At Weekly Tech Rant, where you can find us, and as well, of course, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. So please send us a like, share, tell your friends about us, or get in touch if you think we're talking absolute rubbish. We'd be happy to hear from you. With that, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good one, all.